And with that spirit, we gather here each week to participate in the ongoing creation of something extraordinary. We create and recreate a community of love and hope, a community in which people support each other, a community of all ages and beliefs, all races and ethnicities, all genders and sexual orientations, a community of inclusion, not exclusion, where our doors are open wide to all, a community where we work together to reach out beyond these walls with love and justice and peace. And when we come together, we kindle a flame. Sometimes we're here to rekindle our own flame that may be flickering a bit from the weight of the world. Here we nurture the fire of your spirit. And from the flame that burns within each of us, even when it's flickering at times, we light a common flame. And that truly can set us ablaze, burning as a beacon of welcome, of hope, of comfort, of assurance, and of commitment to creating a church where truly everything is possible. And now as Peter Wiley Cordon comes forward to light our chalice, I invite you to open to the chalice lighting words. We'll read them together. And family. Great. Now, when the fire of our commitment sets our minds and soul ablaze, when our hunger and our passion meet to call us on our way, when we live with deep assurance of the flame that burns within, then our promise finds fulfillment and our future can begin. Each week, to the person here for the first time and the person who's been coming for their entire life, and everybody in between, we extend an invitation to come and go with us to that extraordinary place where there's freedom to believe as you choose, where there are people who believe in and work for justice, where love abounds and joy overflows in singing.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to be back with you, and I'm so grateful to all the people who helped out to make sure that the ministerial needs of this parish were met while I was away. I'm also grateful to the guest ministers who provided worship for you in my absence. I understand some of the preaching was wonderful, and it's good for you to hear some other ministerial voices from this pulpit. But I have to say, before I left, I was tempted to do what one of my colleagues is reported to have done before he went away. Put a little note on the pulpit for the guest minister saying, "Thanks for filling in, but please remember professional courtesy. Don't be too good." Well, as I get reacclimated to the cold of New England weather and to the warmth of this community, and refreshed and enlightened, I hope, with some new ideas from my travels, I hope I won't disappoint you. As most of you know, I was in San Miguel Allende in Mexico for a month, and then for a week I was with 500 of my ministerial colleagues at a conference in Florida. On the JetBlue flight back to Boston on Friday night, there was the president of the UUA, and at least in every third or fourth row on the plane, there were one or two Unitarian Universalist ministers. As one of my colleagues observed, "If this plane goes down, there are going to be a lot of open positions in the Northeast region." Well, I'm glad to say we made it back to Boston safely. And most of us are back in our pulpits this morning, hopefully with some new insights and inspirations. In Mexico, I preached 4 Sundays in January at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Miguel Allende. It is largely an expat community in central Mexico with whom Malcolm and I have developed a relationship over the past many years. You may find it hard to believe, but there were 150 or more people gathered in Unitarian Universalist worship on Sunday morning in the middle of Mexico. They're very special people, but they don't have something that you have, something that relates to the message I want to share this morning. So hold that thought. We'll get back to it. From both places where I found myself during the last month or so, I brought back some insights for what I want to say to you this morning. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Before I get to the insights gleaned during my sabbatical, let me back up and explain in more general terms the message that I feel is so important for us to fully appreciate at this time. It is important for our church and for each of us in our individual lives to set our sights on goals and then achieve them. Good things take time, and there's a process from getting from where we are to where we want to be. Yes, we can be derailed by many things. There are always bumps along the way. Things always take more time and resources than we might have first expected. We can find ourselves losing our way, getting cold feet, losing sight of the goal we set, forgetting why we set the goal we did, wondering if we really set the right goal. We can forget to keep our eyes on the prize. Robert Frost wrote that wonderful poem entitled "Choose Something Like a Star" that the choir just sang magnificently in a setting by Randall Thompson. That poem's part of my regular meditation practice. And if you heard it, it's a conversation with a star. And there are many interpretations about this combination of science and religion in the poem, and that's all very interesting, but it's not where I want to go with it this morning. The star doesn't really give many answers. But at the end of the poem, you heard them, these words. It's the star speaking. Or it's about the star. It, the star, asks of us a certain height. So when at time the mob is swayed to carry blame or praise too far, choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed. I think what Frost is telling us is to set our sights high and keep our eyes on the prize. I hear him saying, keep your eye on the worthy goal. Let that be your guide. There will be times of doubt. There will be naysayers. But don't lose sight of the star. Keep your eye on the prize. You know those words, keep your eye on the prize, you know where they come from? They come from an old African-American spiritual. It was sung in the days of slavery. And even though the masters didn't know it, of course the prize was freedom. Surely in those days, that was not something that seemed attainable. But they kept their eyes on the prize. Generation after generation. And it happened. But that phrase, keep your eyes on the prize, certainly has meanings in many other contexts. It applies to our lives on a personal level. It applies to our community and to this wonderful church. Rick Hansen, the well-known neurologist and author of The Buddhist Brain, puts the message this way. The most important thing is to stay focused on the most important thing. I've had to remind myself of that more than once in my life. Just as when I went into ministry, when I went to law school, I felt a call to do so. In fact, the same words called me to both. Words from the prophet Micah, where in response to the question being asked, what's required of us, comes the response, to do justice, to love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. My road to doing justice then was to be a lawyer. But when I was in law school, going full-time and working as much as I could to earn money, with never enough time to finish all the readings or to get enough sleep, I got sick. I had mononucleosis, which because I kept pushing myself and didn't get the rest I was supposed to, turned into hepatitis, and I eventually collapsed and ended up in the hospital. At that time, unlike what is available to college grads today, there were many jobs I could have stepped into with my bachelor's degree and made an okay living. In the hospital bed, sick as a dog, I thought, why'd I want to be a lawyer anyway? Why don't I set my sights a bit lower? Forget this lofty aspiration and get a 9-to-5 job. I was losing sight of the prize. I don't mean the economic reward of being a lawyer. I mean the real prize for me, which was the privilege to do justice tempered by mercy. But as I got better, I said to myself, no. Don't give up. Don't sell yourself short. Keep your eye on the prize. So I adjusted my life. I cut out most of the working and took out student loan and focused on the prize. My crazy idea had been to go through law school without any loans, as I had undergraduate school. But boy, was it a different time then. I hate to even tell younger people this. I paid my loan off in 7 years at $38 a month. I know what the price of education is today and the size of student debt. And it can be harder to keep your eye on the prize in that context. But I think it's still worth it because the most important thing is to stay focused on the most important thing. The experience in my life, all these experiences have so often been that it really is where you set your sights that determines where you end up. And even if you don't quite make it, when you set your sights high, you get close. You get a lot farther than you would otherwise. Now, of course, there's a place for practical decision making. I'm not saying that there are never times when we have to readjust our sights. But remember, I know this to be true. We're so often capable of much more than we think we are. Aiming high is important in our lives. It's important to encourage it in the lives of our children and our grandchildren. It's also important that we aim high as a community. I believe that together as a church, we should never be satisfied with just good enough, but aim to be the best that we can be. And as we approach next Friday's vote on the Capitol Project, something that we have been working on and researching for years, actually, since the year after I arrived here, and this is year 11 for me, I think it's critical to remember to keep our eyes on the prize, that we remember the most important thing is to stay focused on the most important thing. You know, sometimes we see things most clearly when we step back. And while I've been away, I've had some experiences that have made me resolute in my thinking about this place. I have to tell you about one. In Mexico, I had lunch with my friends Tom and Mark. And they presented me with this beautiful plan, big booklet, which is for a plan for a huge art center in San Miguel. Now, San Miguel is already a center for the arts, but they need more space. And this plan includes a 600-seat theater, a 200-seat theater, a huge outdoor amphitheater, and studio and gallery spaces for every conceivable art form you could name. The price tag for the project is $45 million. They've had this dream for years. And slowly they brought others to the dream. They formed an organization, created a board. The board is half gringo and half Mexican. It's been tough because many thought they were simply crazy. This is Mexico, $45 million for an art center. But they didn't give up. They raised, to people's surprise, a couple of million dollars. And they acquired the land, 350 hectares. They took every opportunity to explain this project to everyone they could. And you know what? The Mexican government has awarded them a rather significant grant. I would say $38 million. Why? Because the Mexican government realized what extraordinary benefits this would bring to this community in the future. I don't remember the exact figure, but it was something like 20 or 30 times the cost of the project would flow into the community in tourist dollars and other sources in just a few years. Now, I'm still not sure it'll all happen. But what is clear to me is what can happen when you keep your eye on the prize. Now, our church is on a bit smaller scale. But there are many of us no less committed to developing it to the next step. And that step includes making our place easily accessible to all people, safer for our children. It includes adding new space, especially the size space that we are lacking. And why is that so important? Because of the benefit it will bring, because of the things that it will make possible. You know, one of the things I struggle with at the San Miguel UU Fellowship is the lack of the desire by some in the congregation to be an institution of liberal religion in the community. They love to meet. They love to give away most of their collection to good causes, and that's great. But they're reluctant to develop as an institution themselves. They don't understand the biggest thing that distinguishes their congregation from this one. It's not theology or geography, or style of worship, or even the demographics of the congregation. And some of you, like Nancy and others who have visited, Roy and Diane who visited San Miguel, surely note that there's a different demographic in that group than ours. But the biggest distinction is their inability thus far to truly build themselves as an institution and to care for that institution. And why is that important? Because it's what makes everything else possible and sustainable. Now, they're now wrestling with that question, and some are coming to see that they could actually do more social justice, more work of love and caring, if they put resources into building the institution. Some of them are realizing what the government of Mexico must have realized, and what we now know, that to be all the things we want to be, to do the good we want to do, we need to be the place, to have the place, to be the institution, to have the structure, to have the facilities, to have the leadership that allows that to happen. And that's really what our capital campaign project is about. It's not building for building's sake. It's building for mission's sake. Every bit of construction that's proposed, which you will vote on Friday, allows us to better serve in some way each other, and not just now, but for generations to come. And not just us, but the community and the world, when you think what will go on there. And you know, sometimes it's an outsider who brings the message to us, and maybe even sees us better than we see ourselves. At our meeting of Unitarian Universalist ministers last week, one of our preachers was James Forbes, the famous retired minister from Riverside Church in New York City, a Baptist with a Pentecostal background, and an insightful and funny and riveting speaker. And he was talking about the course of American religious history and how there have always come these times of adjustment, often called Great Awakenings. In the past, they've come out of the Protestant Christian tradition, with fiery evangelicals proclaiming a new and alive faith for that time. But Forbes said this: "This I know. The next great awakening in this country," and he said, "and there will be one, will not come from that place, but from an interfaith place, a place open to diverse beliefs, for that's the America we are." And he put it this way with a little bit of humor, but saying it was very sincere. He said, "Wouldn't it be strange if the new great awakening in American religion comes from the Unitarians?" And then he said, "No, it wouldn't be strange." I thought about our coffee house, the new revival coffee house. I thought, well, maybe we're ahead of the curve here. But what he was telling us is that in our communities, there are more people like us who are looking for a place like this. And I believe the question for us is, will our institutions be ready? He said to us, "You get it. You're already on your way." And in another workshop, a leader from the Presbyterian Church, Carol Merritt, commented again and again on how we are lined up perfectly with the characteristics and beliefs of the generation now becoming adults. "We're way ahead of the pack," she said, "on what people are now looking for in religion." Her question was, "Will we be out there for these people, letting them know we're here? Will we have new ways to welcome them and connect to them? Will we have the place ready for them?" In our personal lives and in the lives of the church, we need to keep our eyes on the prize. We need to remember the most important thing is to stay focused on the most important thing. When we do this, particularly when we do it together, truly, there is very little we cannot accomplish. When we set our sights and where we set our sights will determine where we end up. Let's not set our sights too low. As Dr. Forbes reminded us, 500 Unitarian Universalist ministers, we're on the road while many other religions are floundering. We've made the leaps to be inclusive, and that's what our time requires. We're ahead of the pack. We're on our way. We need to keep our eyes on the prize and move boldly ahead as First Parish of Stowe and Acton and as Unitarian Universalism in general. It is our time. Indeed, we're on our way.